Aaron Blanchfield striking is hot garbage. It is absolutely terrible. She came into this main event last weekend with all the hype in the world, ready to make a statement against Manon Fiorot, only to run on to ones and twos the entire night. I mean, these cards, if there's a single fight that really set the tone for what the UFC Apex era is like, it is Aaron Blanchfield versus Manon Fiorot. Because it's just us, i.e. Aaron Blanchfield, running onto ones and twos the entire time. I mean, you've already broken MMA Guru's will to live. I mean, look at this guy.
It's all I have in life is MMA, and this is what they're giving us. I don't have nothing else but MMA that makes me happy, and it hasn't made me happy in a year.
But yes, Manon Fiorot, I'm from South Louisiana, I can't speak French, and Fiorot's what we're calling her. She really, I mean, just did one thing the entire night. And, like, it's no discredit to her for doing one thing when Aaron Blanchfield did not change what she was doing to get a response out of Manon Fiorot. So, if the one and two is working for you, keep throwing it. Eventually she'll fall or you'll win the decision. And if there's anybody that wins decisions, it's Manon Fiorot. Now she's beat Aaron Blanchfield and Rose Namajunas back-to-back. Manon Fiorot is the title contender. Unfortunately, Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko are starring on a reality series that nobody watches, The Ultimate Fighter. So she's going to have to wait or fight again. And if I'm her, I'm waiting because I don't have the rankings pulled up right now like I never do every week. And I can guarantee you there's somebody coming up the rear, maybe Tatiana Suarez or somebody. Hold on, I'm pulling them up now, guys, because I'm the world's worst podcaster. I'm never prepared. But, yeah, I guarantee there's somebody coming up. Then it's like, hey, I'll fight you. Alexa Grasso's the pound-for-pound champ. Ugh. You got Macy Barber coming up. Yeah, so, no, never mind. There's nobody. just when the guys at Heavy Hands was talking about this is an actual division. It's not. Yeah, Macy Barber's not fighting Manon Fiorot. She's going to fight Rose Namajunas or somebody. But yeah, it's up to Aaron Blanchfield to prove to Manon Fiorot that I can deal with the weapons you bring to the table. And those weapons are your jab, which is really a good jab. She had a decent sidekick, and it was a cross for the most part. Oh yeah, and a lead hook where she would pivot out on to kind of lead her around the cage. That was it. That's all she had to do. And instead, what does Aaron Blanchfield do? You know the definition of insanity, right? Is doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. She did that. She's just going to run in, throwing wild, weird punches, and with no striking form whatsoever, no real threat to Manon Fiorot. Just a horrible performance, but, you know, I don't want to take away from what Fiorot did because that's how Aaron Blanchfield always fights. So when you're going into a fight like this, you have to be like, how am I going to deal with, if you're Manon Fiorot's team, you're like, how are we going to deal with what Aaron Blanchfield brings to the table, which is a hectic pace that is trying to get into a clinch? How are we going to do that? Well, the first thing we're going to do is stick her with the jab and move out of the way because she's not squared up. She's looking for a clinch. She's not going to shoot a takedown. She's just going to look for the clinch and then trip you or push you to the fence and take you down. It's never just, oh, look, I'm going to take you down. Here's a double leg. Here's a single leg. It's none of that. It's never that with Aaron Blanchfield. She's going to come in. Her chin's going to be high in the air. And we're going to go ahead and we're going to poke the chin and see what happens. Maybe she falls. Maybe I can finally get a finish in the UFC. Who knows? Wee-wee, you know. That was Italian. I don't know why I did that. But yeah, it was just, you know, Manon Fiorot, she did what she was supposed to do. She deserves the title shot next. Now watch Valentina Shevchenko win, like, in a weird way, and they're like, oh no, we got to do Shevchenko Grasso 4 because that's what we did with, no, they didn't actually do, because, Brandon Moreno, I was going to say it was Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo, but that was only for Davison Figueiredo. Remember, Brandon Moreno fight Kai Kara France in the meantime in that, so yeah, I can see that happening, actually. That's not bad. So yeah, I mean, Manon Fiorot deserves it. There's nobody really for her to fight. I mean, I'm looking at the rankings and there's nobody. I get it. I get it. She deserves a title shot, but I don't know if timing's going to work out for her. And that's a lot of what it is. Every you know, I don't want to say title shots or anything, but like that's a lot of what fighting is in general. Just does the timing work out, you know? And turns out for her, it did. So yeah, let's see. Okay, so I lied to you earlier. She has finishes in the UFC. She hasn't finished anybody since Tabitha Ricci in 2021. In, let's see, June of 2021. That was a punching, a standing TKO round two. But since then, she's beat Myra Bueno Silva, title contender, Jennifer Maya, title contender, Caitlin Sermonera, which Chukagian, title contender, Rose Namajunas, former champion, Erin Blanchfield, the hot upcoming prospect. You can't deny her. You can't deny. She fought Leah McCourt. Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's her first fight, and she lost that one, by the way. So, yeah, you can't deny her. Like, she deserves a title shot, and it's, like, time to stop beating around the bush. Erin Blanchfield? Dog, she got to get with the striking pedigree because that was, like I said at the top of the show, horrible. Good night. That was such a bad performance. Just running onto ones and twos all night. What do you think that's going to get you? Especially against somebody with striking. You think her team would be better prepared for a fight like this. Like, we know Manon Fiorot. We know what she's going to do. She's going to go in there. She's going to jab. And she's going to throw a lead hook and throw a cross. And that's it. You know, she's strong and she can get a takedown, but she's not going to take me down. I'm fairly confident Manon Fiorot couldn't keep Erin Blanchfield down. I'm very confident in that. That said, Erin Blanchfield apparently can't get Manon Fiorot down because she can't grab her. She can't deal with a jab. You know, move your head. If you got somebody throwing a jab and it's catching you as you're coming in, move your head, dip, duck, do something. Her corner should have told her this, and they probably did. But it didn't work because she didn't do any of it. Just terrible on Erin Blanchfield's part. Now, for her future, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, I have to come in here and be negative about her performance because it was a bad performance. That said, I'm not going to say she's toast. I don't think she's toast. She's 24 years old. She's the number two contender in the women's strawweight division in the UFC. She's got time to get better. And if she sits and thinks to herself, like, man, I've been exposed to this now, and I've seen, like, there are, I hate this term, but, like, there are levels to striking, and I need to get better, you know, she will. And you know what? Erin Blanchfield, she seems, I don't follow her Instagram or nothing like that, but she seems like a hard worker. The way everybody talks about her, she's a hard worker. At 24 years old, I mean, she has 4 years of contending. Like, she can go fight Rose Namajunas next and have to deal with the same type of striking, but she'll be have more size on her. You know, there are fights out there for her. She already beat Andrade and Chukagian. There's Amanda Ribas, Natalia Silva's on her way up. You know, there's fights for her. Ariane Lipsky, Casey O'Neill. I think they cut her, actually. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, she can fight and hone her skill. Amanda Ribas would be a good one because she has a long weapon with that sidekick, or that spinning back kick, I should say, not the sidekick. And she could learn to deal with that, not have to worry about getting, you know, sparked or anything. She's not going to rematch Andrade, or she might. She needs to fight somebody with fairly decent striking. Rose is, you know, that's a decent fight, I guess. But I feel like Rose Namajunas would be the same as Manon Fiorot, except a little more slick on the feet and tougher to deal with. Rose Namajunas, like, as much as I was poo-pooing on her last week, she brings a lot more to the table still than Manon Fiorot did. And that's the thing, like, Manon Fiorot is just large for her division. I believe she used to fight at 135, if I'm not mistaken. So she's 34 years old. She's born in 90, same year as me. Wow. 5'7". So, yeah, she's big for the weight class, man. Real big. She fought Myra Bueno Silva and beat her. That was at flyweight, though. Okay, so has she ever fought there? At, UAE. Oh, she's a UAE Warriors thing, prospect. No, she's always been flyweight. Okay. Regardless, she's large. She could fight at bantamweight. Bantamweight needs her. But yeah, I mean, Erin Blanchfield, she does have a lot of time to get better. Joaquin Buckley is the next fighter we're going to talk about because why not? He smashed out Vicente Luque. In a fight that, you know, a lot of people had Luque because he looked good against Rafael dos Anjos. But Joaquin Buckley is a totally different style fighter than Rafael dos Anjos, who's looking to grind you out, and he's a lot smaller. Buckley fought at 185. What does that mean? He's coming down. That's what that means. He's fighting Vicente Luque, a lifelong 170er. So Luque is really kind of just having to deal with his size, and he can't impose his own will, and he honestly couldn't get anything going in the striking department. Aside from some early low kicks and stuff, Joaquin Buckley, you know, he was never really in trouble. The only thing that was really bothering him was the low kicks. And once he started coming forward, like, Vicente Luque stopped throwing the low kicks. Just go forward. Now, Joaquin Buckley, he's always the same when he fights. You know, he's going to throw these beautiful combos, whether he's in range or out. He's never going to punch just once. One, two, three. And they look good. But I said on, like, X, I said, like, he's like a cardio kickboxer. He's just practiced these combos, and he's going to default to throw them. It's like you press one button, beep, and you run the whole script, and it's going to go jab, cross, uppercut, right hook. Like, that's what he does. And, you know, Joaquin Buckley showed some good things. You know, he didn't really let Vicente Luque get going. He kind of just pushed him back without pushing him to the fence where he could, you know, make something happen. And the one moment in round two where Vicente Luque really tried to, you know, he tried to take him down, and he thought he had a body lock, you know. I got the body lock. I'm going to take you down. And he pulls guard. And instead of... he didn't even actually pull guard. No, I forgot exactly what happened. But Joaquin Buckley just, like, folded him over on a bad takedown shot. And from there, it was just ground and pound out. Like, there was nothing to it there for Buckley. He kind of just smashed up Vicente Luque, who's on... I mean, let's be honest. Luque, how old is he? Because he's 22, 10-1. He's been around for forever. He's 32, so he's not ancient, but he's got a lot of fight miles on him. His time might be up, and he's 1-3 in his last four. Now, that's Jeff Neal, who's, you know, gassed or garbage, and Bilal Muhammad. But I also feel like, you know, he's gotten a lot of, like, love from his win over Tyron Woodley, which wasn't that great of a win, and then the Michael Chiesa win where he won via Darce. But, like, he ran into, like, Bilal Muhammad and got decisioned, knocked out by Jeff Neal. Beat Dos Anjos, which kind of bought him some time, and now Joaquin Buckley. So we're on, like, the new era, man. And, you know, the rankings aren't out yet, but I'd be willing to bet Joaquin Buckley looks in a good spot, maybe even top 10 in welterweight, because, man, he got the win, you know. And let's be honest, that win's not as valuable as if he were to beat Stephen Thompson, who's a little less washed than Joaquin Buckley is, and Jeff Neal, who's a little less washed by the looks of it. But, yeah, you know, we might get Joaquin Buckley versus Michael Page next, which is weird. It's very weird because they were almost booked to fight at one point. I forget when Buckley said it was, but he was, like, talking to UFC about it or something like that, and he ended up not getting the Michael Page fight. Michael Page runs through him. Like, ain't no question about that. MVP's going to run right through him. Vicente Luque, I really have no desire to see him fight anymore. It's like he took that shellacking against Stephen Thompson, but, like, the Mike Perry fight was great. Brian Barberina, he beat Jalen Turner. So he's got some good wins, but, like, he's also got a win over Bilal, too. You know, round one knockout. That was early in his UFC run. But, I don't have any desire to see him fight anymore. He just didn't do anything out there. It was kind of weird. Like, what is he doing? It's weird. Very odd. Chris Weidman was the tri-main event, I guess you would call it, took on Bruno Silva. Chris Weidman never has luck when he fights at home. You remember the whole, "That's still my boy"? Yeah, that was Chris Weidman in New York when he lost. He loses all the time in New York and stuff. It's hilarious. He just wants to get a win in front of his home crowd, and I thought he was going to, like, retire. So anyways, this fight's really weird. Every time, like, Chris Weidman, first of all, we're going to talk about, like, the eye pokes and stuff in a minute here, but the eye pokes didn't happen first. Okay, so, like, Chris Weidman, every time he kicks, though, you know, with his leg injury and stuff, I'm like, "Ooh, Chris, no, don't do that," because I'm worried he's going to snap his leg again. He's got titanium in his leg, and it's supposed to be stronger, which I think it's not fair, but, you know. So, you know, him and Bruno Silva going at it, and first round, Chris Weidman looks really good. Okay, had a couple eye pokes there. on both sides, I believe. But Chris was by far the worst perpetrator of it. So Bruno Silva kind of comes out in the second round. Bruno Silva, we did a deep dive on him with not a deep dive, but we did look at a lot of what he did with switch hitting against Alex Pereira in our Alex Pereira thing. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Chris Weidman, he looked better, you know. He ate some shots, and I think, like, him taking all of that time off from the leg break really kind of helped his chin. Because if you remember, man, like, Chris Weidman, after he beat Silva, he had some good wins over Machida and Vitor. But then, like, that Rockhold loss hurt him. Then he got knocked out by Yoel, and then Gegard knocked him out. He beat Kelvin Gastelum, which was really cool to see him get back. But then, like, knockout to Jacare, knockout to Dominic Cruz. So he come back. How long after that was it? About a year, a little less than a year. Beat Omari Akhmedov. I was like, man, it's good to see Chris Weidman win, because I used to love Chris Weidman. And then he fought Uriah Hall, and at 17 seconds, this is in 2021, 17 seconds, he breaks his leg. Was that in New York? That was the Masvidal Usman card. Where was that? Five-star Veterans Arena. Where's that? I don't know where that's at. No, that wasn't in New York. That was somewhere. It was cool to see him back. And, you know, he got into the thing with a Polaris grappling event, but comes back and loses to Brad Tavares fairly convincingly, like fairly simple. So Bruno Silva was kind of like a layup, and, you know, he got that. But the eye pokes is crazy. Like, he pokes Bruno Silva in the eye twice already. And then in the, like, closing section of the fight, the closing moment, he throws a jab, but he reaches with his hands and boop, pokes his eye, and he comes with a cross eye poke, pokes his eye again. Two eye pokes in one combination. Combination eye poking. Bruce Lee would be proud. Bruno Silva goes down, and Chris Weidman, like, pounds him out. But, like, you know, Chris went on to say, like, you can't just drop like that. And while I tend to agree with him, you also can't poke somebody in the eye four times. And that leads to, like, the whole rule problem. Like, the rules are the rules. Like, you can't poke somebody in the eye. And, like, when you're looking, like, in the NFL, I use this analogy all the time, but I feel like it holds true. Or any sport, any foul in any sport, like the NFL, if you're like, hey, boom, pass interference, they're not going to say, hey, you get a warning, you pass interference again, and we're going to give you 15 yards. No. And then you can't go, boom. You can't do it four times with getting a warning. No. Each and every time you use pass interference, or you interfere with the pass, I should say, you get 15 yards, automatic first down. It's a death sentence in the sport of football. It changes the course of a fight when you kick somebody in the groin, when you poke their eyes out, when you pull on the fence. There should be automatic point deductions, no matter what. No matter what, accidental or not, it changes how the fight goes. It doesn't matter how incrementally small it is. You don't see in the NFL, you don't see them like, oh, that was like a lesser pass interference, so we're going to let it go. No, a pass interference is a pass interference, and you're going to get 15 yards. There should be a point taken every single time a foul is committed. Now, if it's like intentional or not, should be what caused you to get disqualified, maybe. I don't know. But like, it has to be called every single time. Like, I'm advocating deduct a single point every single time somebody commits a foul. So, yeah. Let's see. Nursultan Ruziboyev got his win. He's like 34-8-2. Finally made his way to the UFC. Kyle Nelson, Bill Algeo. Kyle Nelson won. Chidi Njikane beat Reese McKee, who can't win in the UFC for anything. Nate Landwehr said, if you beat me up, watch what happens. I'm not going to repeat exactly what he said, because I try and be a more family-friendly show and not use profanity. But, and I know it's a mild profanity, but whatever. Verna Janaroba beat Lupi Godinez. Julio Arce beat Herbert Burns. Another, like, cheating. Herbert Burns, like, kneed him in the groin against the fence. Should have taken a point there. And then, like, the very next exchange, he pushes him to the fence. After he lost position, he pushed him to the fence, and he kneed him in the groin again. That should have been another point. That should have been a 10-6 round. I can't say that. Somebody beat Conor Matthew. Aslan beat Turkoglu after, you know, avenging his loss. Jacob Malcoun won. And then Kaolin Lagren, the Irish guy who's like super annoying, won too. So, yeah. Whew, these events have been rough, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm surprised I got this much time out of it. But, like, we've got UFC 300, and that's probably a lot where these good fights have gone. You know, if you look at UFC 300, a lot of those are main event fights on fight nights. But, like, this upcoming weekend, we got Allen and Curtis, which may not be for the hard, well, for the casuals something, but, like, Hernandez and Jackson's a decent fight. Brendan Allen, my Louisiana boy, versus Chris Curtis, a good friend of mine. Morgan Charrier is back, the last pirate. You got Ignacio Baja Mendez is back. You got Norma Dumont and Jermaine Durandamy. I think Durandamy's finally back. When's the last time she fought? Yeah, in 2020, so a long time off for her. Yeah, you got some good fights on this card, man. But UFC 300 is what everybody's talking about. And Alex Pereira is the main event of that. And that's going to be where we finally, you know, we get the good fights. And it's going to be like a good shower after a long, hard, sweaty day of work. We got Alex Pereira versus Jamal Hill. Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje. Jingwei Lee versus, I forget who she's fighting. And you got all these other former title contenders and holders on the card. It's going to be great. I've done an Alex Pereira film study. And, you know, he's real big on the left hook. He's big on the jab to the body, knees in the clinch. But he also has some holes in his game that Jamal Hill can kind of exploit. So it's going to be an interesting fight, you know. Can Alex Pereira beat his sixth straight champion? Or fight win a... he lost to Izzy once, so you know what I'm trying to say. Anyways, it's going to be interesting that UFC 300, I'm actually kind of excited for it.